Okay, welcome back to the programme. We are joined on it now by Hilary Byrne. Is that the way you pronounce the surname?
That is correct, Hilary
Byrne, B-E-I-R-N-E. You're running for Shannadarran as an NUI constituent candidate, and you're going to be attending various events in Donegal over the next 2 weeks. So talk to me about the process of election that you're engaged in then.
Well, NUI is the National University of Ireland constituency, and there's approximately 112,000 registered voters in that constituency. They're scattered all over Ireland, in the UK, US, Europe and Asia. And it's a postal ballot. They received a ballot there earlier this week, and they now have until January 29th to return that ballot to vote for the candidates of their choice.
And are they all based in Ireland, those with a ballot? Is that a proviso of...?
Well, about 100,000 of the 112,000 are based in Ireland, yeah.
Okay. And why should they vote for you?
Well, couple of reasons. A, I've been an educator for 30 plus years, and this constituency is a constituency that's all about education, preparing young people for their future, and in a lot of cases for going abroad. My second priority is to actually represent 20% of Ireland's population. One in five Irish-born nationals currently live abroad, and 70% of the population at some point in time actually worked abroad. Mm. So I have lived in New York for 30 years. And when I spoke at the Irish Global Civic Forum in Dublin Castle a year ago, April, where I talked about the need for Ireland to engage in particular, it's Irish-born national. That's approximately 1 million ambassadors for Ireland that can help to drive investments back to Ireland that are not being engaged. And that's important. Why? Because the Irish economy is over-dependent on multinational corporations, particularly US corporations. And there's major concern here right now, in particular, concerning the Irish economy moving forward with the engagement with these multinational and the incoming administration. Mm-hmm. And here's a person who has ran New York City's St. Patrick's Day parade for over 20 years. I have inroads in parts of the US that could help the Irish economy. And my third priority would be to ensure that the nationals are included in some form of representation. So here's a person who has an opportunity to represent 1 million Irish-born nationals that live abroad.
I think one thing I think is important, and I don't think we do enough of it, and they're referred as a group as the diaspora. It's a word I always thought...
I don't like that word.
It's not a word. It doesn't sound right.
And yes.
I feel like it has to be explained all the time. But the Irish living abroad is that it is a two-way street, you know, that we can't always be looking to them and saying, can you invest in here? What can you bring here? Yes, you can be ambassadors for us here and all. But I think we also, and we try and do it on this programme as much as we can, we also have to sort of engage in the other direction.
Yes.
I think that's critical.
It's very, very important you engage in the other direction. You have, just in London alone, LinkedIn has 19,000 Irish people with the title director. And they are not being engaged for the benefit of this country. And one way of Irish economic policy is totally dependent on Enterprise Ireland and IDEA Ireland to engage businesses abroad. And here you have 1 million ambassadors that are not being engaged. And some of them are highly, highly, highly successful individuals that could drive investments back to Ireland and reduce that over-dependency on multinationals.
And where are you based, Hilary? I mean, if you were a member of the Senate, would you be splitting your time?
Well, I will be. The Senate sits 180 days, so I will be here in Ireland in my hometown of Boyle County, Roscommon, where I will have a Senate office, and that's very, very significant. Excuse me, because in a field of 12 candidates, there's only three of us from the west of Ireland out of the 12. So it's important that the west of Ireland has representation. I spoke here in Letterkenny in September at the Western Development Commission strategy meeting, and I also spoke in Sligo. And it's very, very important that what came out of those meetings was the government needs to appoint senior ministers west of the Shannon. Mm-hmm. We've had none for a while. It's important because that will help to drive infrastructure development that can help places like Donegal. At one point in time, there was a railroad from Galway to Sligo. To get public transportation from Galway to Sligo is a nightmare. That needs to be fixed and addressed, and that in turn will help to not just Sligo but also Donegal, because then it would be a hop, skip and a jump to put in a railroad from Sligo up to Donegal and connect Donegal to the rest of Ireland.
It's possible rural Ireland will have more influence in this government. We have the Rural Group of Independents. They're looking for a rural ministry, effectively more influence in that regard, because there are many for some time that felt that maybe, with everything being very urban-based, that urban decisions were being applied in rural areas with negative consequences for those living in those areas. And I'm not saying it should be you, because that's up to others to decide. Yep. But do you think it's important that there is as much as a rural feeling to the Senate as the may well be to the Dáil, that we can start maybe have some positive discrimination to the west and northwest of Ireland?
Well, I'll put it this way. The more representation that you have from the west of Ireland, the better for the west of Ireland, and particularly in senior positions. And having senators based in the west of Ireland, which I will be, will also help.
Right. So how do you reach, I mean, obviously you do it through interviews like this, right?
Yes.
So how do you reach those with a vote? Because the Senate's a complicated old beast here in this country, isn't it? There are appointments, there are different groups of individuals that have their say.
Yes.
Yours is a big cohort of people. Mm. But as I say, you know, you've talked about other engagements, public engagements you've had. We're having this conversation now. How do you reach this group of individuals? It seems they're scattered.
Literally scattered. Well, social media would be a big, big thing. On LinkedIn, I have about 14,500 followers, of which the majority of them would be NUI. I'm on Facebook, Twitter as well. Since September, I've done, I think, 12 radio interviews to get the word out that I was running in the constituency. I've spoken at several meetings. And when I stand up at a meeting, and I did mention this number earlier on, and I ask how many of you lived abroad, about 70% of the audience put their hands up. Mm. So what I say resonates, the need for representation. The Irish abroad want representation. They want that conductivity. And if you look at what's happening in Ireland today, all these kids are leaving Ireland because of the high cost of living. They're going abroad to Australia and Canada in particular, and their parents don't want that, just like my parent didn't want that when I left back in the late 80s.
I think what people want is it to be a choice.
Yes.
I think people, you know, I mean, none of us want to see our children. Well, I was going to say none of us want to see our leaving children. Some of them, people can't wait for it because they think it's great. But, you know, if one of my children came to me and says, look, you know, I want to go to Australia for a year. If they want to do that, you would support them.
Yes.
I mean, I would coercively try and discourage them. But, you know, I wouldn't want them to come to me and say, I have to do this because I can't do A, B and C. And the only future for myself I can see is somewhere else. And I think if we find ourselves in a position, if we're not in that, and most people believe we're not, that travelling is great and it's great for growth and what have you, but that you do
personal
it by
growth.
Choice, that you don't do it because you feel compelled to do it.
Well, in a conversation with a young man, he was making $40,000 a year here in Ireland, and he says, I can't stay here.
Wow.
I can't afford to stay here.
Right.
Yeah. He says, I'm leaving. I'm going to the States. In conversations with J-1 visa students in New York, they're in similar boats. They say when they left, their entire graduating class left because there's nothing here. The Australian government chartered a plane to bring doctors to Australia. So the future of the medical system here in Ireland, as bad as it is now, there's a shortage of doctors, it's going to get a lot worse.
Well, we're effectively doing the same ourselves to other nations as the Australians we seem to be doing to here. Yes. Okay, Hillary, it's been interesting speaking to you. It's a postal vote exclusively for you, is it?
Yes, it is, yeah.
And when does that vote close?
That closes, all the ballots have to be back by January 29th.
Right. Okay.
So we'll know first week in February.
And do you know what level of engagement there ordinarily is? What kind of response?
Out of 112,000, about 35,000 vote.
Really? Which is a large enough number, but it's also a terrible percentage of the overall entitled to it. Yes. I suppose you're hoping you're the candidate that motivate those who don't ordinarily vote to vote.
Well, I bring a lot to the table. I introduced the wrapping of the bill, silage here in the west of Ireland. In one of my first demonstrations was here in Letterkenny. I have organisational skills that I've put into play, organising New York City's St. Patrick's Day parade, which is the world's largest parade. I have education experience. I'm part of the ad hoc committee to protect the Good Friday Agreement in Washington. So I bring a lot of skills to the plate that a lot of the other candidates don't have.
Well,
so,
we wish you the very best of luck, as we do all candidates. Hillary, thank you so much. Having you in. We'll be back with more shortly. I was going to introduce Brendan Rohan a little earlier on today, and the line fell on us because, of course, today's Little Christmas, but the first Monday of the new year is called Hansel Monday. It's a tradition many of you may not have heard of. Many of you might be familiar with it. Hi, Brendan.
Good morning.
Right, so what's Hansel Monday?
Well, it's a tradition that was described to me by my mother, who is from Clonus in Monaghan, and she described the first Monday of the new year as Hansel Monday. Mm-hmm. And the tradition is, she said, and she used it for many years while she was alive, give me a silver coin on that day. So the tradition is that you give a silver coin to anyone that you want to wish good luck, good fortune to for the year. And if you don't meet them on the day, then you just wrap it up and put their name on it and you give it to them or hold it for them.
And at what stage do you open it?
Oh, well, you don't need to open it. You just put it in a little... You're supposed to keep it in your pocket, in a little wallet or whatever. You're supposed to keep it with you.
Okay, and that just brings you luck. Now, when we talk about silver coins, could it have been like an old 50 pence piece or what have you?
It can be anything, and I usually have to go searching for them. In fact, the bunch I have in front of me at the moment are... Some of them are from France, Switzerland, Spain, Italy, Greece, Denmark... Can be from anywhere. Old English coins, you know, whatever you like, whatever you can find.
Okay. And I suppose, too, these are also, I'm not sure if your mum's with us still or not, but these obviously would have, in any case, sentimental value to you, Brendan, because in terms of sourcing the coin and the thought behind it, that would stick with you, I'm sure.
Well, yes, because on occasion I've received one or two really special ones myself, one a very old Russian coin, one a very old German coin, and at the moment I've just wrapped two of the English, they're 1 ounce of fine silver coins, they're an Australian dollar, and I've wrapped them for my son and my granddaughter who are in Perth, Australia.
Yeah, you don't need to retain these coins in perpetuity. It's okay if you received a coin today that you could give that same coin to someone else next year on the first Monday of the year.
Exactly. So the ones I've just taken out, the ones out of my little wallet that I got from three people last year, and I will use them and pass them on again.
I think you're more of a giver than a getter, are you? You received, how many did you receive last first Monday of the year?
Usually I receive anything from one to maybe five.
And
coins.
How many did you dispatch, Brendan?
It could be anything up to 50, but that's not the point.
It's not the point, but you're single-handedly keeping this tradition alive, almost in your own little pocket of the world. And how has it fared for you? I mean, you know, it is a tradition, and I presume you keep the tradition going if you believe that the receipt or gift of such a coin brings good luck.
Yes. Well, I recall that there was one year, I think it was about 2000 or maybe a little bit before, that I didn't receive any, and I had phenomenal bad luck that year. Now, oddly enough, this time last year, I completely forgot, and I have to admit that I had a mixture of good and bad luck throughout the year.
Well, we hope 2025 is nothing but good luck. And it is a little tradition. I think it is Scottish in origin, or at least in terms of the amount. It's most widely used in that area. You know, our connections obviously between Scotland and Ireland, so and vice versa. Not surprising that some people celebrate it here as well.
Yes, well, particularly in the north, and my mum being from Clonus, I mean, I'm an Ulster man living in Donegal, but obviously we have a huge connection with Scotland, always have had. Look at the geology, look at the music, look at the emigration, you know, and even the MacDonald, Lord of the Isles, ruled from Dunluce across Donegal, Northern Ireland and Scotland. So that's very strong connection has always existed, yes.
And I think if people don't necessarily know about this tradition, and it might be news for some today, I think there's a derivative of it that people might be more familiar with. I think it's connected with it in that if you give someone a handbag or a purse or a wallet that is new as a gift, and I think many still stick with this tradition, you put money in it, and that is good luck, and that is Hanselling, so it's connected to Hansel Monday. So it's not. So people might be familiar with it in a different form or a derivative.
Yes, I'd completely forgotten that, but now that you mention it, yes, there is that connection. But then there's the little thing of paying forward in your local coffee shop for somebody who might just need a little to brighten up their day, or might have forgotten their purse, or can't afford a lunch, or paying for the car behind you at the toll bridge, you know, little things like that, because we're all connected, you see.
Yes, or the Lux Penny, the Lux Penny as well, too, I presume. That's lives
exactly
in the same
that.
Space.
Yeah, yeah.
We try and be nice to each other, and, you know, if you're exiting a car park and you've got a ticket and there's an hour left on it and you pass it to someone coming in, a wonderful act of kindness, which is illegal. You can't transfer car parking tickets. So we try to keep these traditions going, Brendan. We try to be nice to each other, but the state are against us.
No, the state have their rules, but I mean, they only operate 9 to 5, so we can operate as we wish.
They're flexible. And finally, Brendan, any other traditions, or would you be a suspicious person? Do these types of traditions, and then sort of maybe having your superstitions, do they live in the same space, or is this just a positive thing that you have in your life?
I think some of it maybe is maybe a little superstitions that were passed on by my mum particularly, but some of it might relate back to Celtic mythology, all sorts of things like that, you know. And of course, the other tradition that I do every year is making the St. Bridget's crosses, which is something I learned in Donegal. You know, I hadn't seen it happen much elsewhere. It's become more popular now, and it's done in schools elsewhere besides just Donegal. But I think it's a lovely tradition, and it's celebrating like Bridget and the beginning of spring and the hope. I mean, it feels like we're still in winter, and even at midwinter, the growth has already started under the ground. So this connection to the earth and our traditions and to our own spirituality, I think, are important to little reminders. So
oh, for sure. And if you go as well, go back, as has been mentioned on this program before, if you go back hundreds of years, particularly in Ireland, religion and faith and the land and the soil and the sea and the water and the rain were all interlinked, and trees, they were all interlinked. It's very much part of the belief system.
What I love in Ireland particularly is that overlap between the Celtic spirituality and the early Christianity that we had in our Irish monks before the 12th century. And you read people like St. Francis, and he's talking about in the Canticle of the Sun, like Mother Earth, Brother Sun, Sister Moon, Brother Wind, all of that, you know.
I think
that connectedness with the earth, and St. Francis, apparently, or Pope Francis, is speaking about the same thing nowadays, and our relations to the environment and the care of the environment. And of course, that's a big, big issue at the moment with climate change and what we can do to help that and to reverse what's happening.
Okie doke. Listen, it's been lovely speaking to you. I wish you nothing but good luck for 2025, Brendan. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Thank you very much. God
okay,
bless everyone.
Bye bye, Brendan. Okay, have you any traditions or routines that you you practice, be it on the first of the month or any stage throughout January or the year? Something a little perhaps less popular in modern times, something more traditional. Always great to hear great stories and to keep the old memories alive as well. And you're welcome back. And a big thanks for bearing with us today. We did have a major IT outage earlier on today. That's what we came into work to this morning. So we've had to cobble things together a little bit, but we're very close to being back to normal. So apologies if things weren't up to the standards you normally expect, but hopefully maybe too we were able to mask much of what was going on behind the scenes. A lot of it was like the swan, you know, calm and peaceful above the water and kicking like crazy below the water. Right, I'm joined on the programme now by Gene. Hi, Gene. Good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Greg. How are you keeping?
I'm doing all right, Gene. Right, take us back to Friday evening. You were out on the road. What happened?
Well, I was on the roads on Friday evening on about 5:30 prox, and I was driving from Ballybofey down to my home outside Castlefin, but I stopped in Castlefin to go into the shop, and I got a tap on the window, and it was a male occupant, and he wasn't 17 or 18, he was an adult, middle-aged man. I'm not going to say what age he was, but he was a middle-aged man. Uh-huh. And he said to me, he says, "Why were you driving so slow?" He says, "Down the road." And I says, "I beg your pardon." He says, "It's the leg of you," he says, "that actually caused an accident." Wow. And I said to him, "Well, it is my privilege," I said, "to drive whatever speed I like on the road." I says, and I was about to say to him about the conditions, but with that he went into the shop. Now, my problem is, it's not my problem really, but I think he was called Joe. I would like Joe to come on this morning and explain to a lot of people, and especially the number of casualties that have been on the M15, how he would actually talk to them and say, "I think you should be driving harder." Maybe Joe might be listening, and I would be delighted if he'd come on and explain himself, because I've been solving that rule for years and years, and I know the conditions on it, and there's been a lot of casualties on that particular road.
It was also pretty chilly on Friday evening, was it not?
Yeah, the reason I was saying, I wasn't driving slow. I was driving with caution, because it's not what I see, it's what I don't see. Mm. And that's the black ice. And there was black ice on the road, and the gutters weren't coming out until 8 o'clock. But when you have an adult coming along telling you that you're driving too slow, and then we're giving out about the young people, I don't know. I think the mindset has gone in some people at the moment.
I find it amazing that someone would go up to someone's window and tap on the window and say that to them, especially when you'd already pulled in to do your business. You were no longer on the road. What was his attitude? What was his attitude like? Was it confrontational? Was it friendly?
Well, it wasn't friendly. I just wanted to know why I was driving slow. I said, "I think that's my privilege, why I should drive slow." And he says, "You're the cause of accidents." And with that, he shook his head and walked into the shop. Now, I didn't want to make a kind of a show of myself or a scene of myself, because I'm not that type of person that I would actually want an argument. But I was highly thinking about it. I was going to say to him, "Would you like to come over to the garage station now and explain this to the garage station?" Because I could see it as a bit of road rage.
Mm. And maybe it doesn't matter, because you say you were driving at the speed you thought was appropriate for the conditions. Like, do you know what speed you might have been travelling at?
I could tell you, I was doing about 60 kilometres. I would say I was probably doing about 40 miles an hour. Maybe it's not fast enough now for him.
But obviously, 60 kilometres is, you know, not...
But in that particular road, there's three control zones. Mm-hmm. One in Ballybofey, one in Killygarden, and one in Castlefin. And it's not a road. In other words, I'll tell you the type of road. It extends very simple. If there was a tractor in front of you, then most likely the tractor stays with you the whole way till you get to Ballybofey. So it's not a road for speeding.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. It's not a very pleasant road at all. And if you were a tractor, you'd be going much slower than the 60 kilometres you were. But I think there's a couple of things to the call. But, you know, At times we focus on younger drivers, right? But we don't say it's not because younger drivers are responsible for all the carnage on our roads. Of course, it's that they're overrepresented, and maybe we have to reach them before something tragic happens. Your story is that of someone much older than that, middle aged, effectively, and you're questioning his attitude on the roads.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say, about the actual attitude. Now, maybe I should have took the registration number of the car, but I didn't want confrontation. I really didn't. But it has bugged me to think I've been driving quite a long time. I've never been confronted with this situation before, and I certainly haven't been confronted with the situation of the roads. The roads were not good. But all I would like at this moment in time, Joe was very brave to come to my window, and he was very brave to tap my window. I wonder would Joe be as brave enough to come on Highland Radio now tomorrow morning, or even today before South, and explain why he thought I was driving too slow.
Gene, he said it to you. We do often get texts in from people who believe that people driving too slow are the cause of collisions as well. So maybe he will. Who's to say? But anyway, you say it's your prerogative, it's your privilege to drive at a pace which you believe is suitable to the road conditions and what may well be behind or around a corner. Gene, thank you. Safe travelling going forward. Thankfully, I don't believe anything like that's ever happened to me. It wouldn't be very pleasant. It would stick with you, all right. Okay, 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts, that number. A caller says, if the Irish abroad wanted representation, they shouldn't have left. Okay, that's a response to our chat to our earlier listener. Greg, can you say a massive congratulations to Niamh Porrig? They've won their way to the All-Ireland Junior Football semi-final. They play the Cork champions next Sunday at Parnell Park, Dublin. Well done, lads. Well done to you. And you know what? That game, they were due to play over in London before Christmas. It must be one of the last teams playing in the country. They were due to play before Christmas, and that was postponed. And I knew they were heading out there just before the weekend to play this game. And I was like, seriously? There's a moderate weather warning, or amber, as they call it over in Britain. Don't tell me they're all going to have to come back again, having not played that game. But they did play, and they did well, and they won that game, and they go on to represent the county and themselves of Cork, of course, against the Cork champions next Sunday. Greg, there's much more to Nollag Naman than people know. It's totally unchristian, i.e. pagan, celebrating Mother Earth. God created the Earth, not Mother Earth. Celebration of the Earth as a mother comes from the Shandin, the Chaldean mysteries of the Babylonian goddess called Astarte. We could do without... Okay, I get where you're coming from, but it's just women who work really, really hard, having a day where they can just go out for a glass of wine and maybe the housework's done. If they're normally taking on the majority of the... I don't think it's a threat to Christianity. So, you know, Halloween, is that not a pagan festival as well? I mean, what... Religion's great, and it's all that, right? But if women decide to head to out for something to eat today with their sisters and their aunts, and they sit around the table and have a bit of crack and talk about the Christmas, and maybe there's a treat for them when they get home that the dishes are done or something... I don't think it's a threat to Christianity, to be honest with you. But hey, that's your opinion. I was actually thinking when I was chatting to Daryl, we had Daryl Gurney on at the start of the show this morning. He's one of the top darts throwers in the world. And we were talking about Luke Littler and his achievement and what makes you proud and how proud his parents would be. And I was thinking, I came into the house on Friday afternoon or something, and Aaron, who's 18, was standing there emptying the dishwasher. I never asked him to do it, and I was so proud. I thought, wow, well done. And then 24 hours later, some other 17-year-old becomes the World Darts Championship, and wins 500k in the process. It's levels, isn't it? It's about levels of pride. But it did make me think and laugh. Right. Donald O'Crampsey is the Irish language officer in Gweedore. He joins us now. Good morning to you, Donald.
Good morning. Happy New Year. And Nollag Naman, Sona, Dona Mare, Father Tagishta.
Indeed, and Happy New Year to you as well. Right, okay. There is moves on, a petition on, in fact, to... highlight the lack of housing for Irish speakers in the Gaeltacht area. Now, is this I presume it's because the Gaeltacht area is, we would hope, primarily Irish-speaking. Is it specifically for Irish speakers, Donal, or is it for the Gaeltacht area, generally speaking?
Well, we are all well aware of the housing crisis. It's the crisis of our time, really. You know, since the foundation of the state, I don't think there has been a housing crisis like this. And I suppose it's to do with the lack of housing that has been provided over the last 10 years due to the crash. And the local authorities are playing catch-up and are struggling badly to provide housing for local communities. These problems are exacerbated in the Gaeltacht because of the language issue. And if we can't provide housing, especially for young couples, the Irish language survived in these areas because of the intergenerational transfer from parents to kids and from grandparents and so on. So that family unit is very important. So it's very important for us that we are able to provide housing for young couples in the Gaeltacht and so that the Irish language will survive on to the next generation. So over the past 10 years, we have realised that it is getting more and more difficult for young couples to acquire housing in their own locality, and the knock-on effect on that in the language is critical.
Yeah, for sure. But Donal, there is no shortage of housing in many of the Gaeltacht areas in Donegal, because they run along our coasts or meander inland into some of the most beautiful areas of our county. So there are tons and tons and tons of houses, but you drive through some of these areas on a Wednesday night in winter and these houses are in darkness bar a security light. I'm talking of holiday homes, of course, Airbnb.
Yeah.
Is that part of the solution, or do you believe, right, that's private property, it's up to them what they do with it, we need to be providing affordable housing? What's your view in that regard, Donal?
Well, I think it's part of the problem, surely, because we're looking at what they've done in Wales, and West Wales especially. They have curtailed holiday homes in certain areas by taxing them heavily, so they become unattractive for people for second homes or investment homes and as such. Now, around Gidore, there's an estimate that about one-third of the houses in Gidore are owned by people that are not living there full-time. Now, some of them would be locals that are living maybe in Dublin, but a lot of them are owned by outsiders, and some of them now have them as Airbnbs, even though they're not local. They may be living in the Northern Ireland, the six counties, and they're buying up houses in Gidore and putting them up on Airbnb. So this has an impact on the local population, and especially young people that want to get a foot on the property ladder, maybe to rent even. There's no houses to rent in Gidore at the moment either. And young couples are left to try and maybe move in with parents and all this, and especially if they have kids, and it can be very difficult, and we're seeing more and more of them are opting to move out.
There's an added frustration too, Donal, in that it can be very difficult for local people to get planning permission to build. So you have these houses, and I think a third sounds conservative when I think of some of the Gaeltacht areas I might know, but I'm not questioning you, Donal, for a second. Mm-hmm. But then when people, if they do have some land in the family, and they say, right, well, these houses are lying empty, they're not for us, there's no houses available for sale, let's build a house. And then they struggle to get planning permission. I think that often can be adding insult to injury.
Yeah, well, there are certain areas, especially along the N56 now, because it's a national route. It's very difficult to obtain planning permission along that because they don't allow access roads onto a national route if the speed limit is over 100 kilometres an hour. So that's an issue through a lot of the county with the N56, and the council has no power to change that, really. It's the National Road Association. We would ask there be a bit of flexibility built into place, and maybe they could reduce the speed limit in certain areas to allow people to build adjacent to this road. In these Gaeltacht areas, and if people have land and they wish to develop houses on them, that there could be a flexibility built into the process.
Yeah, and this is more to a broader point, but it is sad when you travel through certain Gaeltacht areas and you see little collections of houses and you speak to locals and there once was a shop there or what have you, and that's no more. And often you look at the age demographic of an area that was thriving with young people in a packed national school or what have you, and that school's gone, or it has five or six pupils, and the majority of people there 365 days of the year, their age profile is going up and up and up, you know, because a lot of these houses are holiday homes, their investment properties are Airbnbs. Now, The petition that has been sent to the leaders of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, who will be the kingmakers, they're the decision makers. It's probably obvious there's a lack of homes for Irish speakers in the Gaeltacht areas. But what can they do? What are you calling on them to do? Is there an action plan or what?
We have been lobbying for over 3 years now, Dara Brin, with the planning legislation that went through the Dáil Éireadh before Christmas. And as part of that lobbying, we see that the solution to housing in the Gaeltacht lies on the legislation that we already have, especially with Udras na Gaeltacht. Both parties agreed that Udras na Gaeltacht is crucial for sustaining Gaeltacht communities. But Udras na Gaeltacht are only at 75% of the funding they had in 2008. So as part of our petition, we want the legislative powers of Udras na Gaeltacht to be strengthened regarding planning, and that Udras na Gaeltacht would be recognised as an approved housing body, and that it would adequate funding and staffing would be provided for Udras to be able to take on that role as an approved housing body in the Gaeltacht.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Go ahead,
Donald. Please go ahead.
Yeah, we are also looking up to 2009. The Department of the Gaeltacht had housing support schemes for people that were building or maybe renovating properties, and that was discontinued in 2009. So we asked that those schemes would be re-established, and that would help people as well, you know, looking maybe to renovate houses or else to build houses in their own area.
We do have that scheme that's ongoing at the moment. There is additional money for houses on islands. Why not for houses in Gaeltacht areas? Why not make it even more attractive and convert some of these? And there are some beautiful older buildings that are just dying to be brought back to life.
Yeah, these are all these kind of solutions that were discussed with Dara Brin, and he was very, very positive that there would be solutions found, and he has promised guidelines for the local authorities dealing with planning applications in the Gaeltacht areas. Mm-hmm. As of 3 years ago, these guidelines were promised, and we still haven't seen them. You know, so we would like, that's one of a part of our petition as well, that these guidelines would not only be published but would be implemented by the local authorities. Micheál Martin and Simon Harris have agreed, and with the discussions we have with our group, Bainiú an Connemara, and this campaign Chin Chan, have agreed to look at this. But we have to just keep the pressure on them now as the government is formed.
It's
that
obvious,
we need to look at this.
It's obvious too, because if you want to protect and enhance the Irish language, Gaelic as a living language, you have to have people able to live and raise families in these Gaeltacht areas, because the mission is impossible or very difficult otherwise. And you're in whilst the iron is hot, just as they begin government or continue government formation talks. Donald, we'll stay in touch. It's been lovely speaking to you.
Thank you very much, Graham.
Gur Mahagut, thank you very much for your time.
Good.
Donald O'Crampsey there, Irish Language Officer with Gwydor. Now, I'm told Mina Roy, very bad, so be careful. Fintown is fine, and Glen Swilly. There is a lorry struggling somewhere. I'm going to open up because it was coming from a listener. Colleen. Letterkenny to Dunlow. Sorry, that's previously. Hello, Greg. Arctic stuck heading up Mina Roy towards Fintown. Okay, so that's obviously travelling conditions obviously difficult in that area. We're here all of the time, by the way, to help get information out there. So if you have anything in terms of the roads and road conditions, an area that you want to know about, or some information you can pass on, please get in touch with us and we'll pass that on. Greg, this morning I noticed so many cars off the road, some of them slightly and some of the cars very badly damaged. I cannot understand why people are not driving with more care and why these roads are not gritted. Donegal is such a rural place and such little public traffic. Surely that should make us the exception for gritting. Maybe so many people out there saying the weather's not bad at all that people are disregarding the weather warnings as well. Do you know what I mean? The weather warnings are there for a reason. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of them, but for crying out loud, let's not try and offset those warnings and have people going off the roads and what have you. I feel we would be doing that lovely man an injustice by electing him to the Shannon, given the amount of skills and experience he has, and he'd end up feeling somewhat disillusioned at how long it takes to get things done here. That comes in from Gary. Thanks, Gary. Right, going to have to take a quick break. Back with our next caller after these.
The 9 Till Noon Show, brought to you by Kelly's Toyota. With over 50 years of experience, trust us to help you on your electric journey.
Join me, Marty Friel, this and every Friday night from 8 for Rocking Hits on Highland Radio in association with Arena 7 Letterkenny. If you're celebrating a birthday or a work night out, Arena 7 Entertainment Complex has it all. Check out arena7.ie.
That's the sound of someone sleeping soundly on a Restex mattress. Choose from the Donegal range. A Teelan, a Kinigo, or a Mulroy mattress. It'll change the way you sleep forever. Restex Beds, Mountaintop, Letterkenny. Leave the rest to us.
Tesco Club Card gives you the power to more with double points this January. Start the morning with Special K 750 gram, now €3. Or on the go with Nature Valley Oats and Honey 10-pack for just €2.50. And refresh the family with a Capri Sun Orange 10-pack, also €2.50.
Glebe Builders is a leading construction company in the Northwest with projects in operation nationwide. Their reputation for excellence has led to significant repeat business from clients and the continued growth of Glebe Builders. They currently have job opportunities in Donegal for an operations director, contracts manager, quantity surveyor, site clerk and project manager. For further info, please send your CV to jobs@glebebuilders.com or contact the hiring manager Charlotte Kelly on 086 032 4692.
Highland Radio weather updates with McElhinney's. It's time to save big with the McElhinney's Winter Sale. Enjoy up to 50% off fashion, homeware, accessories and more in store and online at McElhinney's.com today.
Okie doke, let's have a look at the weather forecast now. And today, cold with sunshine and scattered showers of rain, hail and sleet and snow. Top temperatures generally ranging just 2 to 5 degrees. Northwesterly winds will increase moderate to fresh and gusting. I can see that's happening as I look out through the window here. And just to let you know that we are in a moderate yellow temperature warning until Thursday. So whatever happens tonight, it's probably going to freeze. And also, just to be aware that when a road is gritted, it is in that moment that the salt and the grit has its impact. But you get a shower of rain and that can lessen the impact that gritting has on the road. So just use your own senses and sensibilities, I think, when out and about. James is with me now. Hi, James.
Hi, Greg.
You had your van in for a bit of work at a business before Christmas. What happened after?
So it was towed by this company to their premises where they carried out some work.
Yeah.
Wasn't major work, but when I went to pick it up, it was there for roughly 5 days. When I went to pick it up, I was paying the bill and the receptionist handed me a parking ticket. I thought it was a joke to start with. And she said, that's a parking ticket for you too, which I refused. I paid the bill and I then contacted Donegal County Council and they told me to go through an appeal, to lodge an appeal online.
Yeah.
Which I did. I told them exactly what had happened. But that appeal was unsuccessful. I got word back and
right, just before,
they said
to be very clear here, your van was picked up from somewhere, your house or somewhere. It was driven...
It broke down in the town here, okay. It was towed from that location.
You had no hand actual part in this. It was towed from that location... They had it for 5 days. Then you went to pick it up.
Approximately,
When you went to pick it up, having not been in the vehicle, having driven or parked it, so they obviously, when they took it off the tower, sat it on a double yellow line.
Well, I don't know if that's what maybe it was after they carried the work out. They needed the space or something. I don't know that they parked it on a double yellow line. I don't know exactly. But they parked it on a double yellow line while it was with them.
Right. So you've had, this is completely out of your control. So say you appeal the fine and you're unsuccessful, does the fine increase or are you still faced with paying the original fine?
Well, basically what they've said is it has to be paid now by the 26th of January. Mm. I think it's £40. I'm not sure, but If it's not paid by then, it doubles.
Right. So, and you've gone through the appeal. So, what do you do?
Yeah, but what they've said then, they've sent me. I said you download a PDF. It's a form to nominate a driver. When I said I wasn't driving it, they says, "Well, you can nominate a driver," but I don't know what that. I mean, do I put the name of someone who works in that business on it, and their address? So.
I think they understand that
I wasn't driving the van, but because it's registered to me, that it's me that's liable for the fine.
Right, so this is very much like penalty points then, so isn't it? If I lent my car to someone, they drive it and exceed the speed limit, I'll get the penalty points notification, and I presume, though, the driver, I can't just nominate someone because that would be crazy, wouldn't it? I presume the driver them. So, in other words, this business would have to accept responsibility for parking the vehicle where it was parked, I would imagine.
Yes,
I don't think you could just stick their name down, James.
Yeah. So I sort of don't know where I'm at the minute because, I mean, I wasn't driving the van.
Yeah, of course you weren't. So post-appeal, did you go back to the business and say, look, I did appeal this?
I haven't gone back to the business yet. That might be my next step.
Right, but okay.
I just thought that because they handed it to me there and then that they weren't going to accept responsibility for it.
Well, listen, maybe we've had this chat, James, and they understand the situation a little bit clearer. Get in contact with them, see what they say, and would you let us know? Because it might be a case where they go, all right, James, sorry, didn't quite realise, listen, we'll pick up the tab for that 40-year-old, whatever it might be. But will you contact them and then get back in touch with us? And in the meantime, if any listeners have any experience of this or any knowledge of this, they can get in. I have a feeling it'll get resolved, James, one way or other without you having to spend the cash. But let's see. You contact them, then get back in touch with us and we'll see what the story is.
Okay.
Cheers, buddy. Take care of yourself. Thanks very much. A weird one, that. It's the start of the year and some strange stuff is popping up already. Let's see. Some of your comments here before we go. Along with it being Nollag na Mann, today is also the anniversary of the worst storm ever to hit Ireland, the night of the big wind. It happened in 1838 in different parts of Ireland. It goes under different names. The Night of the Andrew Nugent is what it's called in the Gwydor Rosses area. I'm sure Dr. Joe Kelly has a lot of info on the storm. The Night of the Andrew Nugent, is that true? Or did anyone check that? Or maybe, I presume it's true. If someone texted in, it must be true. There is a saying, and I'm not sure if the younger generation have heard it, find a penny, pick it up, pass it on, and all day long you'll have good luck. Find a penny, pick it up, pass it on, and all day long you'll have a luck. You'll have luck. Hi, Greg. Recyclists, while I've nothing at all against them whatsoever, could you please ask the cyclists in Letterkenny who are travelling around the town with no high-vis vest and extremely poor lighting? It's no better than a candle, and the traffic, the motorists, will struggle to notice you. Please get a vest. And as for the scooters above the hospital area, around Hegarty's garage towards the town, etc., you are in the dark. In dark clothes, black scooters, no visibility at all. Again, please light up your scooters and get vests. Thanks, Greg. I'm a regular listener. Great, thanks. Good to have you on board. It is frustrating. Even this morning, travelling to work, there was someone walking in fully dark clothing and only a light on their phone to notify that they were there on the wrong side of the road as well. It does make it very, very difficult. We all want to avoid any loss of life or tragedy. So, as much as motorists and cars need to have their headlights on and their lights on, then surely we all need to take similar responsibility. Hi, Greg. Prisons were in English colonial import to control the subjected Irish through the brutality of imprisonment. Native Brehon law had no place for prisons. People paid honour prices for any wrongdoing the person committed, and it simply worked through Irish wisdom. It's time to do the smart and financially prudent thing by saving hundreds of millions of euro a year by closing down all the Irish prisons. It is past time to take the colonial binders off. That's a different angle. All right, Raymond, listen, thank you very much for that, and thank you to all of you for listening to the show today. We really do appreciate it. That's where we do have to leave it. If you want to contact us, if you're listening to the podcast or overnight, feel free to email comments@highlandradio.com and we'll carry them into the next live show. For me, Greg Hughes, Caroline Orr, who researched and produced, assisted by Shannon Wilkins, have a fantastic day.